Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hang on to your balls. It's time for the Horror Hangout Podcast.
Welcome to the Horror Hangout Podcast, where two bearded film fans watch the 50 best horror movies ever and talk about them. This is the 59th episode of the 50 best horror movies ever. My name is Luke Condor. I'm Kate, and I'm joined by my regular co-host, It's
Mr. Ben Errington.
Yeah, someone pointed out, like, how come you're doing the 50 best horror movies and this is episode 58, talking about the last episode? And then we had to point out, yeah, we do get a bit bored sometimes, so we have to mix it up.
Yeah, we don't go straight. We're not on the straight and narrow.
No.
We're just taking a lot of detours.
Yeah.
Bendy. You know, sometimes we'll go off and explore a little suburb and go and explore a little ghost town.
And here we are on another little cul-de-sac, looking around. Look at that. It's a film called Hereditary.
Oh.
But before that, have you done any... have you spotted a guff or two? Have you found one? Have you come across
open.
A guff?
I've always got my eyes open for a guff.
Happened upon a guff the other day.
Did you? How did it make you feel?
Queasy.
Queasy. I haven't really done much horror. The only horror stuff that I've taken into my person, into my physical body through my eyes, is weird description. Is Resident Evil 2 remake news playthroughs, walkthroughs, videos. Obviously, it was announced with a gameplay trailer and like a sort of reveal trailer at E3. So I've been watching lots of that. Lots of people have been playing it.
All the playthroughs and stuff.
Yeah, pretty much. So quite a substantial chunk of like what seems to be quite early on in the game in Resident Evil 2, Raccoon City Police Department.
Yeah.
And I'm liking what I'm seeing so far. It's looking like a good combination of the Resident Evil 7 engine, so it kind of looks like that, over-the-shoulder Resident Evil 4 style. And pretty damn gory.
Yeah, that's fun. There's that this Resi engine, whatever they call it. I think it's the RE engine.
RE engine.
Resi engine, let's go with. And it's like I don't know how they sort of render the graphics of that guy's face. There's like a still or like an image of some guy's face, and you can probably see like the tendons under there and like under his cheek and stuff. It's really gross.
Yeah,
really.
You kind of like in the playthrough, you kind of lift that guy's head up, and his head sort of like almost split in half.
Yeah,
it's just real. It's just real.
It looks like the first time I've been actually kind of excited because I kind of didn't want Reggie to do zombies because I kind of liked all the different ways they were taking it. But this looks really like has me salivating for zombies.
I think they've gone off kilt. They've gone like off on experienced other things like the Last Plagueis and sort of all the stuff in Resident Evil 7. So it's nice to come back to zombies.
Yeah,
and do them in a slightly different way, or maybe do them in like a really traditional way, because we haven't necessarily experienced that. There was a little bit of that in Resident Evil 6.
Yeah,
but that was kind of like really action heavy anyway. So it's nice for it to go back. And it looks like obviously they haven't completely. Obviously, yes, they built the game from the ground up, but it still looks the same. Doors are still in the same places and things. Obviously, they've moved a lot around.
Yeah,
but it kind of still looks like the same place.
Yeah, I'm excited because I've never played Resident Evil 2. Resident Evil 7 and 4 are the only ones I've played.
Oh, no way. Yeah. You should go and play Resident Evil 2 before this one comes out.
Well, I'm planning on doing 1 because there's that HD remake.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that'd be fun. Let's give two a go.
And Zero as well. Zero, give that a shot.
Zero, good.
Zero's good, yeah. Cool. Same sort of vibes as the original remake, sort of HD remake of the first one. So
Yeah, give it a go.
Other than that, I've just been watching Jurassic World. I don't know if we discussed that last week. Did we discuss that?
No, I think so.
Okay, saw Jurassic World. Thought it was all right, you know. It wasn't brilliant. It's been getting slated quite a lot. I kind of enjoyed it, but it wasn't perfect. It felt very similar to The Lost World, so the second film.
Yeah, it looked like it's been followed exactly the same like trajectory.
There are things happening that I was like, that exact shot happened in The Lost World.
Was that like a T-Rex in a swimming pool?
No, unfortunately not. But I mean, it was all very similar. It got a bit silly. You kind of had to suspend your disbelief. I know it's dinosaurs anyway, so you kind of have to. But it was entertaining for what it was. It just didn't have what I've always loved about Jurassic Park. I think you've got it. Obviously, it's constant throughout the first film, and you do get quite a lot of it in the second film as well. But it's just like the horror, those horror elements. I know it's like an adventure film, action adventure, but you do get those quiet moments of horror, and I think it just did. Well, Ian Malcolm explains it first. It explains it the best. He says, that's how it always starts. And later there's running and screaming. that's how it does. But for some reason, this film just goes, here we go then, it's going off. Whoa.
Yeah.
It's just all a bit. Do you know what I mean? And Velociraptors have now been reduced to nothing more than like friendly
Pokemon
sidekicks. Pokemon, yeah. And the Velociraptors Chocobos. Were like the Velociraptors are the most gruesome, the most brutal of everything out of the Jurassic Park series. And I think they always kept that. Even in Jurassic World, there was plenty of that where you're like, these are bloody horrible beasts. Careful not to make friends with them because they'll bite your arm off.
Yeah.
But with this one, you're a bit like, oh. There's a whole third act which is kind of good. And even though it's got a lot of issues, this whole third act could have easily been a film on its own. They could have really sort of dialed up the sort of haunted house, monster in a house type thing, and there are a lot of good sequences.
Were they like mutant ones, like mutant dinosaurs? Because that's where I sort of like go, I'm not that interested in like genetically modified ones. I just
this is like, so obviously you get the Indominus Rex from Jurassic World.
Yeah,
this is a Indoraptor, so
right.
It's like supposed to be like the perfect raptor, and yeah. I know. There was talk of them doing like dinosaur human hybrids when this whole series got rebooted. So I'm glad they didn't do that. But it just made me think. I would love to see a dinosaur horror movie. And I know we're going back to Dino Crisis because I love it. But a Dino Crisis movie done right, like a horror movie with dinosaurs, would be great.
But I mean, it's just so. Maybe they'd be more tempted to do it now, seeing as horror movies are now like making bank. But they're so expensive to make, aren't they, these dinosaur films?
So expensive to make, and I guess kids love dinosaurs.
Yeah,
so
I'd be more interested in like a Resi 7 version of Dino Crisis. You know what I mean? That sort of that level of horror.
Yeah.
Immersion in a dinosaur.
There's just there's just like one dinosaur somewhere. There's one like horrible raptor thing lurking. Yeah. You got to try and like outsmart it and get away from it. That'd be great.
Yeah, mix The Grey. You've seen The Grey?
Yeah.
Mix The Grey, but instead of wolves, they're dinosaurs.
Yeah.
And you've got like a little pack of people you're trying to get through the woods, and you're trying to like a survival horror in the middle of the woods. Mate, I'd love it.
Good.
Yeah.
It sounds great. I like it.
Speaking of horror in the woods, I've been reading the book version of The Ritual. Did we do an episode on The Ritual?
No, we didn't.
Oh, we probably should have done. I've been reading the book version. And the first half of the book is pretty much the same, but as good, if not better, really. Like, it's the same. It's the four guys in the woods and in the Scandinavian woods, and they get lost and start to get picked off by this unseen creature. But it's so, especially the bit in the house, it was scary in the film. It really got to me in the film, but it's same in the book. But this second half of the book has so far has been quite different. I don't want to spoil it, but because I'm not even finished it myself, but it's got more about, without spoiling it, it's got more about black metal and like death metal and like Scandinavian death metal people in it. I don't want to spoil it, but it's got this completely different sort of angle at the end. But what else? So other guffs, I accidentally watched South Park, Bigger, Longer, and Uncut.
Accidentally fell into it.
It was like Sunday, and I was like, I want to listen to that. song, Quite a Little Mountain Town, and I put on South Park on Amazon Prime, and then that played, and then it was, you know, the Thompson Phillips song, and I was like, I can't, you know, stop now. And then it was the next song and the next song, and I just ended up watching the entire thing. And it's so good. That film, I think it's my favourite musical.
Yeah.
It's got so many good... Like,
it's
you know,
because in my head, I don't think of it as a musical, but yeah.
Oh my God, there's so many good songs. What would Brian Boitano do?
There's a, yeah, oh yeah.
La Resistance Lives On. That's that bit that sort of... it's the same in any musical where they have all these different songs throughout, and then they have like a bit of a medley song at the end. It is, the Resistance Lives On is that. In South Park movie, and it's so good. And there's the bit where the devil's singing about, it's like singing like a power rock ballad about living up there, and he goes to a really high up there, like a really sort of, mate, it's such a good film. I don't know why more people don't.
What year did that come out? 90s? Late 90s?
I think late 90s, it's got to be or something.
But I haven't seen it in a long time. I was obsessed with South Park when I was a kid. So
if you ever get a chance, I would definitely recommend going to watch The Book of Mormon, the musical.
Oh yeah, see, I've heard a lot about that. And I saw a lot. I saw a lot of it when I was in New York. I saw a lot of signage, advertisement, but I never really knew what was going on. But that's written by Trey Parker.
It's
Matt
written
Stone,
by Trey Parker, Matt Stone, and the guy who did the music for Frozen and Avenue Q. If you've ever
Avenue Q, that's the Muppet thing. Isn't it?
Yeah, but that's really good as well. But The Book of Mormon is a similar sort of humor and song style to South Park. But yeah, that's good. And lastly, I watched Deep Red on Shudder. It's a Dario Argento film. It's as insane as most of the others. It's not quite as like stylized as Suspiria or Phenomena. It's about a piano player who witnesses a psychic medium woman being murdered, and he wants to find out who the killer is. And it's just this killer. It's got really crazy prog funk music that plays almost like.
Oh.
There's points where you think that's the wrong music. Is this right? Is this like an error or something?
The music in Suspiria is quite prog, though, isn't it?
Like this is more like funky prog. Like Suspiria has that kind of like twinkly, you know, that sort of creepy sort of twinkliness to it. This is that bum 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 bum. So like slap bass and stuff going on. And there's a really great murder scene where the killer. It's like a whodunit sort of thing. You sort of find out who it is at the end. There's a really great murder scene at the end, where a woman, the killer, like runs a hot bath and then boils her face in the hot bath.
Oh, it's like what is this hot bath? Jesus.
Yeah. I mean, it's like when Kat has a bath. She does it so hot, I can't even get in.
Can't even go in the same room as it.
Yeah.
Ah, melting.
Yeah, but I definitely recommend it. It's
I don't think I've ever seen it.
Argento films are weird. I think my favourite has been Suspiria, really, but Phenomena, in terms of absolutely bonkers craziness, I think Phenomena is my favourite.
Yeah, well, obviously we're getting a Suspiria remake. Did we talk about that trailer?
I think so. There's a teaser trailer out there, isn't there?
There is a teaser trailer, and it's apparently the score is being done by Tom York as well.
Oh, yeah. I'll be into it then.
Good old Tom York.
Yeah.
Doing it. Well, yeah. I think it looks pretty cool. Obviously a lot of interesting actresses and like some big names like Tilda Swinton and whoever that bird from 50 Shades of Bloody Grey was.
Dakota Johnson.
Chloe Moretz as well, is that right?
Yeah, I didn't see her in the teaser. It's weird because they've dialed down, I think they've made a smart decision by dialing down all of the crazy lights and candy-coloured stuff.
Yeah.
And it looks more in keeping with like Black Swan or something like that.
Yeah, I'm
up for it.
I was getting Black Swan vibes as well. Yeah, I'm definitely up for it. I'm always up for it, mate. You know me.
I do. Okay. You do. That's the Gus swept out of the way.
Get rid of them, mate. Absolutely no time for them.
Get them blown out of the way. And so Hereditary. Do you want to tell us a bit about it?
Hereditary, yeah. So we're reviewing brand new release again, which is lovely. Keeping right on top of things.
I was really excited about this one.
Yeah, me too. And as I said, I don't think I'd read a little bit about it, seen a trailer. Don't think I'd sort of watched too much and sort of kept quite an open mind. Obviously, you didn't see too much in the trailer anyway.
Yeah.
So Hereditary is a 2018 American supernatural horror film written and directed by Ari Aster in his feature directorial debut. It stars Toni Collette, Alex Wolff, Millie Shapiro, Anne Dowd, and Gabriel Byrne. And follows a family who is haunted following the death of their reclusive grandmother.
Lovely. So on Rotten Tomatoes, the critics' consensus is Hereditary uses its classic setup as a framework for a harrowing, uncommonly unsettling horror film whose cold touch lingers long beyond the closing credits. 91% on Rotten Tomatoes, 7.8 on IMDb. Mark Kermode, of all the people I thought would like it, he didn't like it. Oh, he did. He liked the first half an hour. I think he liked that it had. He liked the promise. Thought it had promise, but he didn't like the way it went after.
I wasn't totally on board with his comparisons either. I was a bit like, well, no, I'm not sure if I'm feeling that.
Yeah.
He was comparing it to some films where I was a bit like, I didn't get the same vibes from that. But
this is the first film I've seen in a long time, and I was like, I actually can't wait to watch it again. Like, yeah. I know you had a bad cinema experience.
It wasn't great, but it could have been better. But then it feels like it gives me an excuse to watch it again. As I said, when I saw it in the cinema, the audience were a bit like laughing at bits which potentially weren't funny. There was a lot of chatting, especially during the very quiet moments. So I felt like it kind of like ruined the tension for me a little bit.
Yeah.
But yeah, I still like did really, really enjoy it, and it stuck with me since. So I mean, I've been thinking a lot about it, reading up on a lot of the sort of.
Yeah, little... you like that kind of stuff, don't you? When there's like such
The little nuggets of information. Because there were so many times where I thought, I noticed something. Did I see this? Did I see that? And when you get it confirmed for you, yes, I did see that, yes.
I've won that one. Yeah.
Also loads of stuff that I was like, I didn't notice that. And maybe it could be this. And it's another film where the conclusion is very much open to interpretation, which I kind of like. I like it when a film kind of does that. There's not like a definitive explanation always.
Yeah.
Or if there is, you can kind of put your own spin on it, so...
So I've read a few people saying that they've had audiences that were laughing, and I think it's because people kind of expected they're going to go into to watch The Conjuring or something that's going to be similarly jump scary and like a roller coaster of a film. But obviously this isn't that. It's more of it's like a slow build. I mean, I would say that like there's some scares near the start that like I thought were on par with like The Conjuring and stuff like that. Maybe even more so.
Yeah. It's just a very sort of intense experience from start to finish.
Yeah.
Like, it kind of draws on a lot of different emotions. Like, I mean, you know how I feel about jump scares anyway. I think, obviously, they're quite cheap. When they're in a film that doesn't feel so worthy, I feel a bit like, whoa, you made me jump. I feel annoyed at you, film, because I'm not even enjoying you, but just the loud noise made me jump.
Yeah.
Whereas I think this film kind of earns those moments. I think it takes its time. And it earns those moments. And it's not always a jump scare that gets you. Sometimes it's just like a really extreme emotional reaction.
Yeah.
Like I had an extreme emotional reaction like in probably two or three moments in this film.
Yeah.
Which was like, almost got to the point where, I mean, I was covering my mouth. There was a point where I was almost covering my eyes, which I never do because I'm hard as nails.
Hard as nails, lad. Yeah.
But I was a bit like, oh, God. Like, a bit like, oh, gee, do I want to keep looking? It lingered on certain things for kind of too long, and other things were just quite strange to the point where I didn't quite know where to look.
It's very rare that a film nowadays will have even one scene where I'm like it's creeping me out to the point where I have to kind of like look slightly away. But this had like three or four scenes
askew.
When I was like, Jesus, like that I can't handle that.
And I think the performances were incredible as well, like to the point where. Like, I think that was where some of the laughs were coming from in the audience that I had, is that there were some really extreme emotional sort of moments that the sort of these actors were really sort of portraying in ways that made me feel unnerved. But obviously for some people, it made them laugh because it's almost
I laughed, actually. Yeah. In the there's a sort of like mania. It's almost like comical in some of the conversations and. There's some of Toni Collette's delivery, the way she delivers some of these like monologues and lines. I was like, that's almost like a comedy routine. Like the way she's, if you put that sort of emotion in the way she's saying that in a different context, it would just be a comedy routine.
Yeah.
But I think that's what it was going for. I think that's what they aimed to do.
It was supposed to sort of represent the sort of mental, the spiraling out of control that sort of the family was as it was unraveling.
Yeah.
Because even Toni Collette was getting to the point towards the end where she was like, I was like, she's annoying me. Like,
yeah. There were a couple of times I was like, she's not, I want her to die now.
I'm like, God, give it a rest for God's sake. Like, and luckily some of the characters react to her in a way that I kind of felt did kind of feel real.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it was just the uncertainty of what, because I mean, I didn't know what kind of film this was going to be. I didn't know like what kind of supernatural elements there were going to be, how much of it there was going to be. I really didn't. I didn't read any, and there were no buzzwords that I kind of saw. I didn't see any buzzwords like demon, ghost, anything like that. So
So the final reveal is so much sweeter, I think, when you kind of realize what the end, what it is. Because I was a bit worried it was going to get a little bit Babadook. And by that, I mean like metaphorical to the point where it's, you can wash it off as just being a metaphor for something else. And I appreciate that for what it is, but I prefer films that are like, no, it's not a metaphor.
No.
this shit is happening. And this film is like, is the bad thing is definitely happening.
Yeah. Well, it's got a lot of classic horror vibes. I know it's been in its marketing, it's been called like The Exorcist. I kind of felt a few vibes of The Exorcist, but I guess it's because of the subject matter.
Yeah.
But obviously, I felt Rosemary's Baby, Don't Look Now, Suspiria.
Kill List or Wicker Manish sort of stuff.
Loads of Kill List and Wicker Man, especially in the final third.
Mm.
Very Kill List and Wicker Man. So it's like a good blend of sort of like this modern supernatural horror and like the folk horror.
Yeah.
That is also very unnerving. And it's a nice sort of combination of those two things. We're also with Creepy Child, because how many times have we seen creepy child figure in a horror film? In any horror film?
I thought that this, as soon as they introduced her, what's the actress's name? Millie Shapiro.
As soon as they introduced her,
I was like, oh, it's a creepy possessed kid movie. She's going to be the creepy thing in it. And then about half an hour in, I was like, oh, no, no, maybe not then. So you say it's got all these different elements. I will say that there were parts of this film I was like, it's a little bit disjointed in some ways as well. But that might be better on repeated viewings. I'm not too sure now that I know how it is going to end. But there were times when I was like, it's just getting a little bit confused in a way.
There are a couple of moments where the plot kind of really does take you by the hand.
I could have done without that kind of stuff.
Yeah, which I really, yeah, exactly. I really didn't feel like it needed that stuff. That kind of ruined the experience for me a little bit.
Mm.
I was
almost like, it was like, this is going to be playing to loads of people, so I better just put a little bit of exposition, like a book, when opening a book of, oh, that's the bad guy. I needed more. I'd prefer the Kill List ending. If they were just like none of that, and they just had a, like, you do the final reveal, and it's like, what? What does that mean? And that would have got me so perfectly. Yeah. But
couple of moments with exposition with like a book and bits underlined and some voiceover stuff as well, which I was also a bit like.
Was there voiceover? Which bit was that?
Not necessarily voiceover, but towards the end, there was a voice explaining some stuff.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah.
Which kind of like was trying to draw a line under everything.
Yeah.
But for me, at the same time, I kind of understood at this point.
Yeah, me too.
I felt like I understood. I felt like I was there with everybody in this particular moment. I didn't need someone to like explicitly say, this is what's happened. Now this is,
It's almost like the writing lost confidence in how much it had told, you know, how much it had shown throughout the films. We were already there. We didn't need the bit of hand-holding at the end. Yeah. We didn't need that at all. But at the same time, I'm thinking, is that just me being really niggly? Because I did really like this film. Like, I want the same car in a slightly different shade of red. Do you know what I mean?
It's perfect. Yeah.
But just for my personal taste, a bit of onion or, you know, like slightly different.
I know what you mean. This is a lovely steak and cheese footlong, but you just want some red onion and a little bit of barbecue sauce in there.
Just to
bring it together.
Yeah.
I know what you mean. But at the same time, you know, it was pretty up there as a very unconventional horror that does feel quite traditional.
Yeah.
In a sense, it was a weird flavor. Like when you eat like a brand new Christmas flavor of crisps that you're not expected. You know, at Christmas when they bring out like stuffing balls
flavor,
and you'll be like, oh, this is strange, but I like it.
Yeah.
That's exactly what this film was.
I found like it was a missed opportunity that maybe ended up on the cutting room floor a bit with the model house. That's very Toni Collette's character. She builds these model houses and she builds like scenes from her life, like traumatic experiences in these little miniatures. And I was like, oh God, they're going to be doing some creepy stuff with the dolls will move or they'll be in a different place on their own or like, but that never happened. Like, yeah. Never, I was like, that would be the perfect time to do that kind of thing. What I will say, go on, sorry.
There are a few moments of foreshadowing with those dolls.
Yeah.
Where it would sort of put them in certain positions or certain things would happen. And then later on in the film, these things would actually happen in the film.
Also, so exposition was quite cleverly, like, they would reveal scenes from her past.
Yeah.
I thought that was quite good. And another thing with the dollhouse, because the way the film opens, which we'll probably get to in a second, you have the doll's house and it slowly zooms in and then it's imperceptibly turns from the doll's house into the real scene, the real like life of the movie. There are times when you look at these sort of sets and part and the scenes and you're like, it doesn't even feel kind of real in a way because you're not too sure if it's just going to pull back and like, oh, they're in the doll's house. Like, it almost gave it a really creepy sort of surreal feeling.
Sorry if I'm ruining any potential trivia moments. Apparently the whole house was built on a soundstage.
So
maybe that's why it feels a little bit like
unreal, like
a little bit unreal. Yeah, a little bit like it is like a play, like you're watching like a just a something play out. It did on have the a stage.
Now you say that, it did have a very like play feeling to some of the parts, like the dinner scene and when there's a lot of the sort of the house scene actually. But let's get into the actual meat of it. Key players, we've got Toni Collette. She plays Annie. She's the mum of the family. Alex Wolff plays the son. Gabriel Byrne plays the dad. Millie Shapiro plays the daughter. It's a very normal family unit in a sense. Millie Shapiro, the daughter, is who plays Charlie. She's a little bit off. She doesn't talk properly. She doesn't seem like a normal. She seems like she's autistic or like some sort of mental, you know. Difference there, I'm not too sure how to put it. Alex Wolff, the son, Peter, he plays a kid. I think Mark Kermode said it perfect when he said he's like got the hangdog sort of mentality. So he's, you know, he's always looks like put upon. He just wants to drink and smoke and do that kind of stuff. He doesn't want to.
Wants to chill out, man.
Yeah, just wants to play guitar in his bed, like we all do.
Yeah.
I've also Gabriel Byrne playing Steve, the dad. There wasn't too much going on. But I guess someone has to play the straight man for everyone else to go crazy.
He was just exhausted by everyone, I think, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Oh, for God's sake, can we just chill out and have a lovely dinner? I've made a lovely dinner.
Hang on a sec, dude. One sec, sorry. Sorry, my cat was trying to get into the space beneath the sink. And
All right.
We don't want to go in there because it's hard to get out.
Did you say your cat or cat?
Cats, yeah, cat, yeah, she likes to go under there.
Wow.
Okay, so the film, so I watched it last Thursday. I've already forgotten a fair bit of it. You watched it two nights ago.
I watched it Sunday, so that was 2 nights ago.
Okay, so you may have to hold my hand for some of this.
Oh, well.
So the film, it opens with the model house. We've got this incredible use throughout the film of like tilt shift photography, which if you don't know what it is, it's a very certain type of lens which makes real life scenes look like models, like makes them look like tiny, like miniature and made of plastic. And I noticed it a few times. It's the only time I've ever seen tilt shift photography used in any way other than like a nerdy, like they look like models. This is the only time I've ever seen it like used effectively in a way.
Oh, they look like bloody models, don't they? Bloody idiots. I'm gonna stare to you.
So it opens with the house, and then I think we as soon as we're in there, they're just getting ready for the funeral. Toni Collette's mum. Yeah.
So Toni Collette's mum, who she wasn't particularly close with, had quite a difficult relationship with. Her mother was like really secretive and I think she was quite judgmental. And just one of those fraught mother-daughter relationships. But, and of course, when she dies, Annie doesn't necessarily feel too upset. And I think a lot of the family kind of feel relieved as well.
Yeah.
Because as far as when we get a little bit of backstory, it looks like the mother had been, they'd been estranged. So Annie and her mother had been estranged for a while. Then she'd moved in with them when she was unwell, I'm assuming.
She had DID and something else as well.
Yeah.
Various mental illnesses.
Yeah, so she'd moved in with them. So obviously Annie probably was quite put upon by her mum's presence. So there is a sense of relief in a way that she's passed on. Not in like a really, really sinister, mean way, but just a, you know, we all know what that feels like.
Yeah. Then she also, in a speech, in the eulogy, mentions like there's a lot of people here that she's never seen before. She didn't realize her mum had so many friends, or
And so she says her mum would have been a bit
smiling guy
suspicious.
There. Was it at that point where there's a guy smiling at Charlie?
Yeah, so there's a bit where Charlie's kind of looking at her nan's corpse, eating a lovely chocolate bar while she does it, having a good old look at her her nan's corpse, her grandmother. And then, she turns and just sees kind of a weird guy just smiling at her, which was a bit unnerving, wasn't it?
Yeah.
He looked like a pro wrestler from the 90s. He was really tanned and had like really short blonde hair.
Yeah, he looked like he was about to rip his suit off and suplex Charlie.
onto the coffin.
To have a little coffin match.
That would have been great.
Yeah. So then we sort of move on with the days. I think the next day Charlie is at school and she's revealed that she like makes model like toys or like makes little...
little weird sort of out of various bits of like what looks like junk or like other bits, like there's one bit we've got cotton buds for arms, little jars. So she makes like little things. She's doing it obviously at one point in class where she's supposed to be doing a quiz and her teacher kind of has a word, and then a pigeon hits the bloody window, bang.
Then all the kids are playing football or tennis ball out on the park. Can I play? It's not my ball, mate. You know, that sort of standard English school stuff.
Football with a tennis ball. I used to love playing that. It was an extra challenge, wasn't it? Football with a tennis ball.
Do you ever do it with a stone? Playing football with a stone, you got to kick it between the goal nets like just two stones.
It's the NSPCC advert. Yeah. I had to play football with a stone. I think I did, yeah.
The times as well, we had like the four rucksacks made like the post of the wrestling ring.
Definitely did that. And just used to go too brutal, just like actually body slam someone onto hard ground.
Yeah, there's so many times when I think because it's like wrestling like training camps all over the place now. Like there's one in Liverpool, one in Mansfield where I grew up. I was like, if they were around when I was a kid, I would be a wrestler right now.
Yeah,
because
I was
so into it at the time. Practicing submission poses.
They've just announced NXT UK as well, WWE, so you might as well get involved. There's no better time to be a UK wrestler, Luke. Get involved.
Yeah, but I don't even watch it anymore. I need to get back
Condor
into it.
Condor Man.
Yeah.
You need to get back into it.
Yeah.
I digress.
There's the pigeon, whilst they're playing footy and wrestling, Charlie sneaks off. She finds a dead pigeon, and then she takes out a pair of scissors, snips off its head, and then puts it away. Puts the head in the pocket, like we all do.
Which is nice, isn't it? Pocketing the head.
Yeah.
And then we kind of see, so we're introduced to Peter in school as well, and he's having some issues. He's kind of like, he's kind of fancies some girl who sits like a few seats in front of him, doesn't he?
Yeah, she's this weird thing where she just turns and looks at him.
Yeah, she looks at him sometimes as if to say, you prick.
Yeah, I smelled that.
I smelled it. All he wants to do as well is smoke a bowl. Like his friend texts him, want to smoke a bowl at break? He's like, I'm going to smoke a motherfucking bowl.
Yeah. He's got such a blank face.
he's got a great blank face, and also we just point out the fact the mole on his face should get like a best supporting actor nod or something, because
is that a real mole? Do you think the actor's got that?
It's mole? A real mole, yeah, because because he's in a Jumanji,
right? And the mole was in that thing as well.
And the mole was in that as well, yeah. So if it's not a real mole, it's a really weird thing to
he's
do.
Like, people know me as the guy with the mole now, so I can't take it off.
I can't take it off the mole.
I've been typecast. But I think it's handy because later on when they draw his face, because he's got a very normal blank face, normal anyway. Yep. They're like, I know it's him because they've drawn the mole there. That's how I know it's him.
He doesn't quite look. This might just be me sound like an idiot. He doesn't quite look Caucasian. Like it's a Caucasian. He's got Caucasian parents, but I thought he looked.
Yeah.
Possibly somewhat Asian.
He's got. He's got like an Indian sort of face.
Yeah,
I know it's the brown skin, obviously, one thing, but it's also got like a large nose, and you know the features that I would identify as someone being often.
Yeah,
Asian,
that's what I thought. Persuasion. So I was a bit confused as to why he was sort of part of this family, but maybe he is Caucasian. Maybe I've just been totally ignorant, and just because he got a mole in his face, decided that.
Yeah. Well, they were like, this guy is not Caucasian, but in the role description, it says they have a mole. This guy
and
has
he's got a mole. He's got a mole. And we've had no one else.
He's got that down to a T.
With a mole.
He's been practicing all week with that mole.
We could just draw a mole on someone else. Or we could just take mole out of the character description.
You can't,
no!
You can't fake a mole. I want it as authentic as possible.
Yeah. Basically, method. You've not got a mole on your face, but just act as if you have got a mole on your face. That's great. That's great. Yeah. I can see it. I can visualize it, man.
As if your lips are weighted down on one side. Which
yeah,
does
oh, that's
later
great.
On. Yeah.
Wonderful.
Just scratch. Itchy, is it? Yes. Okay. So later on, at some point, Peter is like, is his name Peter? The mole boy
yeah.
is like.
Mole boy is Peter, yeah.
I'm going to a party. We also get the impression that the mum just doesn't have any sort of loving relationship with the kids at all. Like, there's like something there that's just not quite right.
Obviously, she's quite distracted by her work. So, I mean, she's a miniaturist artist.
Yeah.
So, what did you gain from that? Though, what does she actually do? Does she just build miniatures of things for what though? I kept thinking, it's a school for ants, is what I kept thinking.
Yeah. She's like making those, like you know, the little gnat circus things that people used to make. And well, they have like there's like a gallery, isn't there? There was a couple of pieces when I was like, wow, that's actually amazing. There's a piece by the staircase, and it's like three miniature houses stacked on top. And I was like, wow, that actually looks kind of amazing. But a lot of the other things, I was like, I swear they did this on Blue Peter. Like you sort of make it as you go along. Every week.
Thunderbirds Island.
Yeah.
She was like, oh, I'll get a Thunderbirds Island. Get me that empty cereal box and all these little toilet rolls of things.
What is the, what's that island called?
What was that island called? Angel, no.
I think it shows up in an Arctic Monkey song at some point as well.
Thunderbirds Island. Give it a sneaky Google because otherwise I'll be worried about it forever. Yeah, so she's got a load of models. She makes little dollies as well. I mean, I'm just slamming her trade here, but.
Go on. It's just coming up with the band Thunderbirds albums.
Oh, did you search Thunderbirds Island?
No, why did I search Thunderbird album? That was weird. It must have been an auto.
Tracy Island.
Tracy Island, that's the one. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, boy.
So she basically does that, but like at a very good level. So, very good
standard. We understand that she's kind of struggling with some things anyway, because. I'm not sure. I think it's around about this point we understand that she's going to a support group for people who have lost loved ones, and she kind of talks a lot about her family and her relationship with her mum. Explains that her dad, like, didn't her dad like starve himself? He had some sort of mental disorder.
They're like trying to get to talk about her past in this support group, and she goes, "All right, fine. So I've got this mum. She died recently. I didn't really know her. She used to try and it starts coming out like this crazy stuff that mum used to do. Did have a brother, but he killed himself, hung himself on the stair banister. My dad starved himself. Like she starts unreeling that, spooling out of this crazy family history, and that's what I laughed at that because I was like, this like it's almost like ludicrous. Like it sounded like a Chris Morris like comedy sketch to me. It just went that way. And then everyone's reaction is like, oh, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty intense. But yeah, so, and she also explains, obviously, her brother killed himself and he said it was his mum's fault.
Because she was putting people inside him.
Putting people inside her, inside him, sorry. Which obviously was a little bit of a sort of foreshadowing for a certain something.
That's weird. I didn't even make that connection until now. I was like, little people inside her. Yeah, that's good.
Obviously, we start to get a little bit of an insight now into Annie's mum. So, Ellen.
At some point around here as well, Ellen shows up. Ellen DeGeneres. She's like, I'm under. Come on my show.
Come on to my show and talk about it.
There's like a bit I can't really remember. But they do the filmmaker Ari Aster and the cinematographer, obviously, and the set designer. However, they do this. These scenes, they did them better than I've seen them anywhere before, where it's all shadow. The actor looks, and you sort of see a shape, and you are like, what is... And then you start to make out what it is in your head.
it's lit just enough so you can kind of see that someone is there.
Yeah.
And it's not lit, so it's like a, it's not like a silhouette of someone. It's like you can see, like,
yeah,
you
it's
can
weird
see
that
a
how
face.
Do they do this? Yeah. You can see that, like, the skin color and stuff, but it's so faint. It's like, and then when you do start to see it, like, there's one point in the film where you find out it wasn't actually anything, it's just a coat or something. But like, they do that in a lot of films, but they, but you know what it is pretty much straight away. But this did it so perfectly. And it does it later on when there's a smiling dude. that freaked me out so bad.
Yeah.
But it's, yeah, this
it was
so
good because it sort of revealed things like that and sort of showed, like, sort of what might be like a creepy apparition and didn't, like, elaborate on it more than that. So it didn't show you that and then suddenly go, rah! Or suddenly show you that and then, do you know what I mean? It didn't.
Yeah.
It was very, very, it drip fed these little creepy what the fuck moments.
Yeah.
Like, really well, I think. And it just gave the whole film this really sort of unnerving edge that kind of just, like, made, just constantly made me think. And, like, I don't know if it's just me, but this is another thing I got confused by, but the soundtrack was very sort of like, there were a lot of whirry, sort of low hums.
Yeah, I didn't know what to make of the soundtrack. By the end, the very last sequence, the soundtrack suddenly takes on a sort of beautiful tick, and I was like, wow, actually, that was an amazing soundtrack. But it was, I didn't know at the time, but you pointed out it was like a saxophone or...
Yeah, apparently something. There's lots of, like, the composer...
There's brass stuff.
Is a load of, like, saxophone stuff, so Colin Stetson. So, yeah, a load of weird, creepy sort of, like, saxophone experimental things going on, stuff that you would hear and wouldn't go, that's a saxophone.
Yeah.
But then this guy was sort of playing it, and when he was explaining what the director told him to do with the music, he said, just make it sound evil.
Evil, it does sound.
I guess it does. Because I was in the cinema, I thought I could hear. Do you know sometimes when you're watching a really quiet film and you can hear another film in a screen?
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was that, like this weird whirry sort of like low hums throughout. But it was kind of this, and it was just that constant sort of strange feeling of uncertainty.
Yeah. So around this time, Peter's like, Merle, I'm going to a party. Charlie... I can't remember how this happens. Basically, Toni Collette's character, she's busy doing her miniature work, and she's kind of throws Charlie off into Peter's care. Even though she doesn't want to go, Peter doesn't want to take her.
I think she's a bit worried about Charlie not interacting with other kids, and she goes, like, well, Peter, does your sister want to go? And Peter should do a better job here of knowing that he's going to, like, a party for older kids.
Yeah.
So he should do a better job here of going, oh, no, I'm going to be with this person, but he should do a better job.
I'm
going to
be smoking a bowl, man.
Yeah. But he kind of just goes, yeah, come on then. And obviously Charlie doesn't really want to go. She's got things on. She's making shit. And she kind of goes and she's not interested really. And when she gets there, she doesn't kind of want to be left by Peter at all.
Yeah, yeah. But for whatever reason, Toni Collette, she hands Charlie off, and then he goes to this party. Right away, Charlie isn't comfortable because he's like, I don't know anyone here. Why am I here? And then Peter sees the girl that he likes from school, and she's like, let's go smoke some weed in this other room. And Peter gets Charlie to eat some chocolate cake. He's like, look, there's chocolate cake over there.
She loves chocolate.
Carrying a fucking Snickers in your pocket. I'm not Snickers.
You turn into a right diva when you're hungry.
Turn into a right payment. And spoilers. She goes off to eat this chocolate cake and she's munching away at that thing. Looking disgusted.
She's absolutely nailing it. And then she kind of like, she goes a bit like a couple of times, like, oh, there's something a bit weird in there. Like when you're eating a lovely bit of chocolate cake, it's and then cranky. You're like, it's coffee cake.
It's like me when I'm eating a scone, like it's claggy at the back of the throat. Yeah, like, get me a cup of tea quick.
Get me a cup of tea stat.
There's not enough jam on this. Yeah.
Oh, but do you go for jam first or cream first?
Personally, I do cream and then jam on top.
Interesting. I reckon I'd mix it up a bit.
Yeah,
if I did cream first and jam second one time, I'd mix it up the next time.
If I just turn it into a smoothie, I'd smoothie it all together and just have it that way. So fine. Don't mind.
And spread it on a piece of toast.
Yeah. So whilst Thingy's smoking a blunt or whatever he's doing, Charlie, she supposed to have like an anaphylactic shock. And she's not got an EpiPen for some reason. Should always have an EpiPen on them.
But it seems like she goes into anaphylactic shock. And I know they didn't really talk about this too much, but it struck me that she isn't actually allergic to nuts. Did you not get that feeling? She's not allergic to nuts, but something's happening that's making her react like she is allergic to nuts.
So also early on the way to the party, as they passed this telephone pole that we're coming to, there's like a little, we see throughout the film, there's these little like pagan looking symbols.
Yeah.
Like written on stuff. Do you feel like it was...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Some sort of spell thing that made
I think the whole thing was some sort of spell. So this pagan symbol, Annie's mum has it around her neck when she's in the coffin, chilling in the coffin when she's dead.
Chilling.
Annie's got necklace as well, this symbol. And then it's sort of scribed onto like some sort of telephone pole. So I kind of got the feeling that even though she goes into anaphylactic shock, because obviously she doesn't know what's happening, because she's going, my throat feels like it's getting bigger.
Yeah.
And he's like, what the hell's wrong with you? Like, if she was allergic to nuts, I think both of them will kind of know.
But then,
that's how she reacts.
Didn't earlier, they were doing some food thing, and then Toni Collette says, there's no nuts, is there?
Oh.
So they did nut that. Earlier in the film.
Well, I apologise profusely if that's the case, but clearly I took it the wrong way.
Well, maybe, I don't know. I might have even imagined that bit.
Who knows, mate?
Who knows?
Imagine that whole sequence. Imagine 30 minutes of this film.
So Peter's like, oh shit, and there's like a panic moment. He goes, come on, Annie, get in the car. I felt
a bit sorry for them, well, him in this instance, because he like carries her to the car as well. He carries her like she's
so
like a tiny
embarrassing.
Little baby.
Yeah.
Baby. Not embarrassing, but I kind of felt like, oh, like he cares about her. He wants her to be all right.
Oh,
you know
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, definitely.
And
then
when it like, obviously when we get the outcome of this whole scenario, I was just a bit like, what?
Yeah. Well, so far in this film, I'm like, this is a creepy kid movie. She's going to get possessed. It's the next Exorcist, mate. This is how it
yep,
goes.
She's going to vomit green. She's going to get...
That chocolate cake is going to come back on someone's face soon.
Yep.
But so she's like, her throat's getting bigger, she can't breathe, and then he's driving super fast.
So he's high at the stage as well. He's been smoking a bowl.
Yeah.
So he's high as balls. He's tripping balls right now.
Tripping balls, tripping bollocks. And he's like, don't worry, Annie, we'll get there any moment now. We'll get to the hospital. And then she winds the window down because they don't have like, the child lock on the windows. Yeah, they go halfway.
She's like 13 anyway.
Yeah. and they pass. This completely shocked me. Completely. She shoves her head out the window, and then they pass the telephone pole, and then not. Well, I didn't know.
There's like a dead animal in the road, isn't there?
So
he's driving. Obviously, he's going up to like almost 80 miles an hour because he's like, we're gonna be at the hospital soon. Don't worry, you're not gonna die. I know your throat's getting tight. And then he sees an animal in the road, and obviously he swerves out of the way of the animal.
Yeah.
Right past that telephone pole.
Yeah.
As Charlie's got her head hanging out.
We hear a thump.
And we hear a thump, yeah. So I guess we don't particularly know exactly what happened.
I don't know what's going on for this.
You
point.
Hear a So you hear a thump. He stops. He's obviously terrified. He can't really say a word.
Yeah.
He's kind of like, he goes to say at one point, "Are you okay?" But like, he can't even finish a sentence. He goes, "Are you?" Like that.
Yeah.
So he knows something terrible's happened. But I don't think I understood. I didn't understand the severity of it at this point. Did you?
No, no. I thought like she knocked herself out or something. I had no idea it was going to be as bad as it was actually. But I think everyone's talked about Toni Collette's acting in this, but I do feel, looking back, that Alex Wolff's acting in this particular scene was pretty amazing. Like, he felt like genuine shock. Like, he didn't look around, didn't say anything. It's very silent. He just sort of started to drive home and said, "It's going to be okay. It's going to be okay." Left Charlie's body. Left Charlie in the car. Went to bed, and then we just sort of stay with him until the morning after. And we hear his, what's her name,
Annie.
And he goes outside, opens the door, and she just like wails. It's horrific.
I mean, that was horrible.
Yeah, and then it suddenly cuts to the head.
And then it suddenly cuts to Charlie's severed head at the roadside in the morning, just covered in ants.
With the bottom of the mouth is like mashed to hell. It was so bad.
And it's this moment. This was the first proper extreme reaction, because it just kind of happens. And I guess I kind of expected one thing or another, but it's just the way it kind of cuts to that.
Yeah.
You don't see anything. You're with Peter, and it his reaction to hearing his mum scream.
Yeah.
And then you see the head, and I was like, "Whoa!" And it just lingered on it for ages. It lingered on it for a long time.
Ants scurrying all over it.
It was bloody horrible, mate. Yeah. So then it kind of like, we get quite a lot of quick cuts where time goes quite fast here, where we see like the funeral. Good shot of obviously the coffin going down into the ground, and we sort of follow it down, and that was good. And then obviously we kind of just see Annie like grieving. She just kind of led on the floor, like sort of saying she just wants to die. And I think it's then you kind of like experience like that kind of grief. And there's got to be nothing like it. And it's just, I felt it. I felt the intenseness of it, because the shock was there with me from seeing the head as well. So I was kind of felt like I was there with them, like going, "Jesus Christ, this is insane."
She's probably wailing for a while. Yeah. And obviously there's like the tension now between the father, Gabriel Byrne's character. He holds no malice towards his son, but obviously Annie blames Peter in some degree, because it's some part of his fault, but it's also part of her fault as well. And there's a scene where they're at a dinner table. Gabriel Byrne's made the food, and it's just a great scene where there's nothing horrific about it, but it's just a really great dramatic scene about taking responsibility and who's blaming who for what and that kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean it was a good scene where he kind of swore at her as well, and she like really went off on him.
Yeah.
but yeah, I think like PTSD, Peter's kind of suffering from a little bit. Annie's kind of she's had a lot of resentment towards Peter, I guess, throughout her life, and now because she does reveal at some point as well that she didn't even want to keep him when she was pregnant. Yeah. So now this resentment's kind of like coming out, and she's kind of like got a reason to legitimize that sort of resentment now.
Yeah.
So she's kind of like not holding back as much.
At what point does she tell? Who does she tell that she was going to? Because we find out that she sleepwalks as well.
Yeah.
She's telling someone. Is it in a support group where she's like, "I sleepwalk"?
Yeah. So she goes back to the support group at one point as well. I don't know if it was before Charlie died or after, but she talks about, it might be after, when she talks about when she used to sleepwalk, and one time she woke up and she'd covered Peter and Charlie in paint thinner, and she had a match in her hand, and then suddenly she woke up, put the match out.
See,
obviously,
that bit was like, made me not like Annie anywhere. This is the start of Annie's downfall in my mind, because she was like, "And he won't forgive me for it." He won't forgive me for the fact that like it looked like I was going to burn him.
"I'm just bloody sleepwalking, aren't I?" I stood over him with a knife going, "I'm going to kill you, you little shit. I'm sleepwalking."
Yeah. Peter also, there's a couple of bits where you think there's Annie in the room. Annie does this tongue popping thing throughout the film. I think you hear it every now and again.
Charlie, isn't it?
Charlie does it. Yeah. There's this tongue popping. You hear it every now and again. You see like...
It's almost like a tick type thing that she used to do, isn't it?
Yeah, like a brain thing, yeah. So at some point as well, what's his name gets the call, the dad, that the Annie's mum has been, her body's missing from the graveyard. Like someone's been in and taken the body.
Someone's desecrated the grave, and he kind of he doesn't tell Annie, but he doesn't react in a way that someone normally would. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah, he's like, classic thingy's mum.
Classic Joan. I mean, she's dead.
In-laws, eh?
Not Joan, sorry.
What are you going to do?
In-laws, eh?
Yeah.
He desecrated the grave, I reckon. He done it.
He done it. So at this point, I think we're introduced to... Annie goes back to the counselling group, but she meets a woman.
Yeah. So she can't, like, go in. She's, like, trying to prep herself to go in. She can't go into the sort of the group therapy sessions.
Yeah.
And suddenly this woman, like, just flags her down and says, oh, I saw you last time or a while ago, a few months ago. How's things and everything? and they sort of kind of, like, start communicating, exchange numbers. And then we kind of see her again later. Is that right? Do we see it? Do we see it?
Yeah, see the, like, at the art store. So,
that's
and right. They kind of become fast friends. I think she even goes around to a house and there's like a pillow with some embroidery and it looks like, oh, my mum used to do a similar thing.
Yeah,
like, oh, what a coincidence. Yeah,
there's a, like a welcome mat.
Yeah.
In there.
Needle pointed sort of deal.
Yeah. So Joan obviously says that she lost a grandson. She lost like a 7-year-old grandson.
Yeah.
So they're kind of like bonding over that. Obviously Annie's lost her daughter. Joan's lost her grandson. So they're kind of bonding over that, and then later on, Jones like suddenly reveals to, even though she's like, "Oh my God, I was a skeptic, and I went there, and everyone else was a skeptic, but you have to believe me." Like she is quite convincing because Annie clearly isn't going for it. She's like, "What?" But Joan says that she communicated with her dead grandson through us like a seance. She gives her like a sort of a flyer type thing with some information on
pamphlet.
Pamphlet. Yeah. Obviously, Annie is very, very skeptical at this stage, thinking, like, what the hell? But I guess she's thinking, if Joan's using it as a way to cope throughout this, maybe she should kind of go along with it just to kind of...
Yeah.
She's a new friend. I think she doesn't feel always particularly comfortable. So she kind of goes along with it for a little while.
Yeah. Mm. And then we do actually... She does speak to the dead son, don't she, in somewhere, in like a Ouija...
So she gets the glass to move, and then she uses like a chalkboard, and the chalkboard says "I love you, Grammy."
Yeah.
So like.
Oh, of course.
She convinces Annie there that it's all real, and obviously tells her exactly how she needs to perform the seance, that she needs to do it with all of her family in the house, and kind of like shows her a few ways to do it. So obviously Annie goes away, still kind of like shocked at what she's seen. Like she is a bit overwhelming for her as well.
Yeah.
but then she goes back to her house, and obviously she thinks about doing the old seance to communicate with Charlie, but she didn't do it just yet.
No, well, I think there's a series of scenes and bits where you see Annie sort of getting more and more, she leans more and more into depression. She starts sleeping in the treehouse outside where Charlie used to sleep. She doesn't spend any time with the husband. Their relationship's like getting, you know, more and more destitute, and
she makes a miniature of the like accident which killed Charlie. So like a car, telephone pole, and then Charlie's like severed head on the floor.
Yeah,
which obviously her husband is like, "What the flying flip are you doing?"
Yeah, she also gets, so there's like a gallery waiting for her to finish her latest collection of miniatures, and she gets a call from them, and she freaks out, starts smashing it all up. She Hulk smashes it.
Because they say like, "Look, we're just calling to see how you are, and we just want to know, we're all thinking of you, but when the fuck are you gonna finish this shit? I know you've lost your mum and your daughter recently, but we still got deadlines." Jesus.
So I'm not too sure. I mean, she obviously doesn't quite believe it, but she does do the seance. Actually, is it here where she does sleepwalk and she finds herself, is Peter getting haunted by this point?
Yeah.
And so then someone's trying to pull his head off or something.
Yeah, so Peter sort of has some sort of weird dream where like some arms come and grab his head when he's asleep, trying to pull his head off. And he's having dreams as well where she dreams that she's in his room, and again he's covered in the lighter fluid, she's covered
and
in
the ants
lighter
as well,
fluid.
Pouring out of his mouth and stuff.
The ants as well. I mean, there's loads of these sort of like creepy things where she's obviously, so what we understand is that there's some sort of force at this stage trying to like mentally break down Peter and Annie.
There's an amazing bit, even though it turns out to be a dream, where she says to Peter, "You know, I never meant to have, never wanted you." And she like covers her mouth and she realizes what she said, like the horror of light. And then she sort of realizes that she tried to get rid of him in whatever ways, like alcohol, when she was pregnant with him. And she was it Peter? She wasn't allowed to breastfeed, or was it Peter and Charlie?
I think it was just Peter. Just Charlie, because Charlie. So Annie's mum, Ellen, was like used to want to just feed the baby, and she was very much like involved with there. But Charlie does make a point earlier in the film where she says that she wanted me to be a boy.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. So they get basically getting haunted by something of her. So she does a séance. I think she kind of realizes, thinks that it will make things better for everyone if she does get to speak to Charlie. She has this sketchbook, which Charlie used to use to sketch weird looking pictures of people. And she's like, use the sketchbook. But I don't think it works until she gets, until she wakes Peter and the husband up.
Yeah. So she gets both of them to come downstairs, put their hands on the glass and try and like communicate with Charlie. Which everyone kind of starts freaking out. Obviously Peter gets very upset. The glass does move. And yeah. Does something happen in the sketchbook at this point?
Not yet. I think later on it starts to draw Peter, like repeat the picture to Peter on its own.
Yeah. So like he's very affected by the sort of seance, and then the seance ends when some like a glass cabinet gets smashed.
Yeah.
So at this point, like it's really affecting Peter. He's getting really upset, and this sort of like PTSD and like his hallucinations are really sort of starting to dial up now.
Yeah, there's loads of great scenes here. So there's one scene which really freaked me out, where Peter is at school, he's trying to eat his lunch, and there's people at school just minding their own business, and he starts to hear this like voice like Peter, and he looks up, and he looks across the road, it's like busy traffic stuff, but there's is it Joan, the woman?
Yeah, it's Joan.
She's on the other side of the road.
Just before this as well, it's been revealed that Joan knew Annie's mum, so knew Ellen. She was in some photos with her. Annie goes back to her house, banging on her door to obviously try and speak to her. And we see in Joan's apartment, like a picture of Peter and some weird sort of like, all these weird sort of like...
Actually, like doing a triangle on his face and stuff.
Like a triangle on his face, and there's candles all around. So obviously some sort of ritual. And then we see Joan across the school from, across the street, sorry, from Peter's school.
And she's like, Peter, I ban you. It sounds like she's trying to perform a possession of him. But like no one else can see Joan doing this, or like it's all very sort of only Peter can hear it or see it. And there's a really weird, I found that kind of terrifying because no one else could see it, and she was like trying to exorcise him from his own body. It just seemed really such an interesting and scary sort of idea.
He looked around at everybody else as well to sort of see.
And no one was like confirming that it was actually happening. And he started to see this like flashing lights sort of thing. I don't know if it describes like a spectral sort of light that keeps appearing everywhere.
So we saw that a couple of times early in the film as well, when Charlie was kind of, there was a point where Charlie was kind of distracted by something outside of the treehouse. She went walking down, she saw this light kind of lead her, and then on the distance she kind of saw what looked like a figure and then some like fire.
But we never got
anything else from that. And again, that looks like in hindsight that was some sort of ritual as well.
Yeah. So Peter goes into his class and he's trying to ignore whatever happened. And then he looks to the left in the mirror and he sees himself smiling. Has his nose changed at this point? Has his nose turned to look more like Charlie's?
Oh, I don't know.
I don't know if this is part of it or not. Or if
you're just like, hang on a minute, your nose looks suspiciously different.
Yeah.
I didn't notice that.
And he suddenly sort of kind of like goes all strange and then starts banging his face on the...
This was weird. So he kind of like, looks like he's having some sort of spasm fit type thing.
His lips all up, the moles, you know, just there.
This was intense. This was some real physical like acting. Like I was really confused by how it was happening.
Yeah. So at this point, Annie... is getting haunted as well. I think I can't remember, but I do remember she decides to burn the book.
Yeah. Well, obviously, when Peter does go like that, he does smash his face onto the desk like twice as well, really hard.
Yeah.
Breaks his schnoz. Now his nose looks different.
He knocks himself out. So
Annie's like trying to burn the. So she thinks that somehow the sketchbook is connected to everything that's happening. Kind of wants to burn it, so she throws it in the fire. But then instead of it starts burning, but then she starts burning as well, like her arm does.
Yeah, she puts it out. And then she tells, whilst Alex is asleep in his bed, like he's recovering, she tells, she's trying to get her husband to burn the thing for her, and he's like, "Look, I'm not doing this anymore. You've obviously having complete mental breakdown."
Well, just before that, she does find a body up in the attic.
Oh god, yeah.
And shows him as well. So it's a headless body, which she thinks is her mum.
Yeah.
The same symbol that was around her neck, same symbol from the pole, is drawn in what looks like blood.
Yeah.
On the wall. Up there, and obviously Steve is getting to the point like he's seen it, but now he's saying, "You did this. You desecrated your mum's grave. You brought your mum's body here. You've gone insane. Basically, I'm not dealing with this anymore." And Annie's like, "No, I've got to burn the book. And even though I'm going to die as well, it'll end all of this."
Yeah, she gets to sacrifice herself to save everyone, and she's like trying to say, she's trying to say goodbye. She's trying to make amends in a way. She's like, "I love you."
You can see that he's not.
She throws love the book in the fire. Yeah, I love you so much. See you later. She throws the book into the fire, and then it bursts into flames.
He bursts into flames, which is pretty.
He did not marry well.
No, he didn't.
Yeah.
And then obviously Peter awakens, goes around the house. The house is really quiet, and then we get some more of this. There was a good shot here where Annie seems to now be possessed by this demon. So we got a little bit of exposition earlier where she finds a book, reads a bit about the payment. Her mum was obviously involved with some sort of cult, which had quite a big following, and she reads a bit about this demon called Payman. He's a king of hell, needs to basically take over the body of a male.
Yeah.
There's a lot of bits where like bits of the book are like underlined, so it's a bit.
Yeah, I could do without that stuff. But so Peter wakes up. He's completely alone. Somewhere in the house, his mum, possessed, is knocking around somewhere. He starts walking around, super dark, super creepy. He's like, "Shall I turn the light on?" No, it wouldn't be as scary. So he leaves that off, smart, and then he starts to walk through the house. And then he looks, he finds his dad's dead barbecue body on the floor, and he's like, "Oh no, papa Throughout this film, he starts to call his mum mummy at this point as well. Like he's kind of regressing in a way. And then he looks to the left, and then in the same sort of veiled, shadowy way we've seen people before, we just see a grinning, naked dude.
Yeah.
It looks like he's now he's in his like wrestling gear. Now he looks like he's about to body slam Peter. and then he turns, and his mum bursts out of the corner from nowhere. He runs away. And then he runs to the place where, out of anywhere, you should not go to this point. But I always love it when this happens, but he goes into the belly of the beast. It reminds me of when Ash goes into the trapdoor in Evil Dead, where you're like, that's where you don't want to be at all. Yeah. Goes up into the attic. This is another of my favourite moments. Like, he's, like, looking around. His mum's still underneath, and she's, like, knocking. And he's, like, saying, "No, mummy, leave me alone, mummy." And then it reveals that he's actually using your head to sort of knock at the beneath of the trapdoor.
Really intently as well.
And then Peter's like looking around, and then you just hear this like squelching noise. Because you know the body's up there as well. Like, you know that there's a headless body somewhere. Something creepy as hell is happening there. And then he looks up, and you see his reaction for a long time, and he's like freaked to hell. He's like, what is he seeing? And it reveals that it's his mum floating in the roof space, like with a Garrett sort of piano wire or something, sawing her own head off.
Yeah, and she starts nice and slowly, and it gets faster and faster and faster. How did she even get up there? She was the other side of the door a second ago.
Yeah, that's a good point. I don't know why, don't know how, but how? And then I'm sure I remember it being a very clever way of the head falling off. I think it cut to outside the house, and then we just heard like the head.
So
sort of...
so he's looking up at her as she continuously like taking her head off, and he sees more naked like followers.
They're all there. A ton of them.
They're all there in the corner. Ants. So he runs and jumps out of the window, smash.
Yeah.
Lands face first in the garden, and it's this moment that we hear the head. First of all, we hear the head come off.
Yeah.
And then we see that weird sort of like light just sort of like fade, just goes into Peter's body. So
yeah,
we understand that that's sort of like a manifestation of the possession.
Yeah. As such. Yeah. And then we come into the end. He sort of looks up, and in the treehouse, he sees Annie's body floating up into the.
That was a great shot, I think.
Yeah, it's cool.
Annie's headless body floating up into a treehouse.
Yeah.
It was mad. It was absolutely mad.
He follows her into it, and then we see basically a very similar idol to what Charlie used to make, but a lot on a grander scale. And instead of like the pigeon's head or whatever, it's her own mangled corpse head on this idol. And then we see the both of the headless body of his mum and his grandma, like in a praying position to, and there's all the naked people sort of praying. They're like doing, you know, praying to Mecca or whatever they do.
Yeah.
They're doing. And then Peter stood there, and then it cuts back and he looks back down at the bodies again, and they've turned around, so they're now praying towards him instead.
Yeah.
Which I thought that's so creepy. Such a good moment.
Yeah.
And I think Joan's there, like exposition into hell.
He's yeah,
like,
yeah.
Now you are payment. Charlie was payment. She wasn't ever like a human person thing, but she's born in the wrong body. Now we've righted that. Now she's in the right body.
Now she's in your body. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So and now he's free to rule over everybody.
And then they start saying hail, like exactly the same way that Evil Dead 2 ended. They're like hail, yeah. Hail. Did you think there's like more voices there than?
Yeah, I felt like there's loads of voices. I mean, that it was only a small like.
It was only a club's worth.
Yeah, but bowling clubs with a lot of old people.
Yeah.
But it was creepy, man. This whole ending was creepy. I think that it was that those folk horror vibes like really took over, and it was a bit unexpected at this stage. So yeah, definitely felt like Kill List in the way.
Yeah, I think if they got rid of some of the exposition, especially the book. And that kind of stuff. And if it just left a lot of that stuff open to your own, you know, research and the way you think back on it, or even just left it to the point where you never really know. Like, Kill List, like, you don't really know what the fuck that's about, really.
No.
But other than that, it's a great... It's my favourite new horror this year so far, by a fair way, I think.
Yeah, I think so. I think it introduces a lot of really interesting themes. It had a lot of those classic horror vibes. It didn't feel too over the top, not too many jump scares. It didn't suffer from being like a modern horror film, where sometimes I feel like modern horror films kind of have to hit certain checkpoints and hit certain beats in order for it to like feel like an actual scary film. But like that sort of uncertainty that kind of like lingered throughout it, and that creepiness, like I think possession has always been something for me that demon possession has always been something for me that makes me feel a little bit uneasy. So I guess in a way that's kind of why it's been compared to The Exorcist, but it's not quite as visceral as that.
Yeah.
Even though it has got some very very like extreme moments.
Definitely, yeah. Okay, so are you ready for some trivia?
Oh yes.
So this is a new film, and it's always really hard when there's a new film, a new director. There isn't really that much trivia to work from.
No.
Okay, so which of the four family members injured themselves in the name of art?
Art. Well, actually physically injured themselves.
Yeah.
Probably. Well, it was Peter, when he smashed his face on the table or when he jumped out the window. I bet something went wrong there.
Yeah, so it is Alex Wolff. He offered to literally smash his face into... Apparently he's a bit of a method actor. He offered to literally smash his face into the school desk, a real school desk. And the director said, no, we'll get a soft desk for you.
We'll get a bouncy castle for you to headbutt.
But apparently he still... I don't think he broke his nose, but he said it still hurt his nose in doing it.
Or even though it was like soft.
Yeah, because I think he smashed his face into it so hard.
It wasn't soft enough.
Yeah, I mean, I've hit a bounce castle, you know, That is most of my face pretty good.
Yeah.
Okay. What's the age gap between Toni Collette and Gabriel Byrne? Remember, they're a married couple.
Yeah, I did think this during the film. I thought she was considerably younger than them.
Yeah.
So I reckon he's like 60 odd.
Right.
And she's like late 40s.
Wow.
So like,
yeah. Go on.
15 years.
He's 68 and she's 44.
68?
Yeah. So there's a 24, 80. I don't know if that was like intentional. Whoa. Though. But maybe to point out that like, she's almost, because she was like a bratty child at some point. She's almost just as childish as
and the he's a bit like this. Come on.
Yeah.
Give it a rest.
Okay, number three. Number three. Did director Ari Aster ask her, Mana Asda, what it is that he is after?
Oh my god, I hope so. I really hope so. Did Ari Aster? Ari, do you Aster? Yeah, he did.
He did, correct, yeah. Director Ari Aster asked a man at Asda what it is that he is after. And he said, did you after? And he said, yeah.
What was it he was after?
No, I don't know. Bit of a bottle of council pop. Okay. Like I said, this film didn't have too many sort of trivia questions for me to pull from. So this is one of mine. Number four, this is a film that starred not only one, but two or more actors. True or false?
Wait, say again?
This is a film that starred not only one, but two or more actors. True or false?
It's true.
Yes.
There were quite a few people in this.
It was, yeah. Well spotted. Nailed it. okay. Number five. Which actor was named after the way they died in this film?
Gabriel Byrne.
Yeah.
Yes.
Obviously, he was burnt to death in this film.
He was named after the way. Not the other way around.
Yeah.
He was named after the way he died.
It was,
oh Jesus.
They knew that one day. Well, it's funny as well because obviously they didn't give him a second name. He was born with that. Yeah. Okay. But yeah, man, you did well on the trivia. It's a couple of sticky ones in there, a couple of sticky widgets, which you successfully navigated your way around. feel better?
Yeah, I feel good. That was a stretch.
Yeah,
I think I've already summed up how I feel about this film. So, yeah. I mean, I definitely want to see it again. So at the moment, you know, sometimes when you've just seen a film, you kind of like, you think about, oh yeah, that was great. Mm. You feel a bit more like that. I'm still kind of like on the wave of it and like thinking about things. So I would give it a B plus.
B plus, yeah.
B, and it might come back down to a B eventually when I'm off the wave. But yeah. Right now I'm on the wave and I kind of feel like I'm still interested.
On the high, yeah, riding the wave high, yeah. I'm the same. I was actually a little bit like, I was really looking for this film, but I was also reserved because I just have these like anti-hype sort of detectors. And whenever like, if someone gives me a book and said it's the best book you'll ever read, instantly I'm like, well, no, we'll see about that, eh? Let's see if I can prove you wrong. And the same with this film, I was like, this isn't the next Exorcist, more like Exorcist shit. And,
more like the next Schitzercist, am I right?
And I'm so ready to sort of be like, this is shit. But I can't help but admit that this was a great, surprisingly horrific film that like had me constantly on edge. Like the scares were like fantastic. The jump scares were the way I like jump scares to be, and it also had this sort of creeping unease. And it's nihilistic as fuck, which is my favorite way to end a film. Love a film that ends with no one winning, apart from the bad guys.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's very unconventional horror, especially for like a modern horror. Like I think, obviously, especially the way it's been marketed, people might expect a certain thing, and it's not that. I mean, it's very, very weird, but in the best possible way.
This is the film that I think will be on, you know, the top horror movies of the post 2000.
Exactly, and yeah. Mark Kermode compared it to The Babadook, which is on this list, on the Empire list that we've been doing. Pisses all over that.
I think it does. I'd like Babadook, but nowhere near as much as I like this, because this feels like a real horror movie in a way.
A real horror guff.
I like to be horrified a little bit when I watch horror movies.
Yeah.
Not just annoyed at the bratty kids.
No. Oh, yeah.
But yeah, so B plus for me as well. I think if you're going to... This is a film you should really go and watch at the cinema.
At the theatre.
But beware, you might find people there laughing at points they're not supposed to laugh at.
Yeah.
I've heard people go and they're like saying the crowds are like, oh, this is shit because it's not The Conjuring
pretty much what I had. And when I left the cinema, a lot of people were kind of walking on going, well, that was shit. Oh, the trailer made it look so good.
Yeah.
But you know, what are you going to do?
Yeah. I would like to see more of this type of movie made. So go watch this film at the cinema if you can. Okay, so next week we're going to be getting back on the list. We're in the last five of the list now. Next week we're on about John Carpenter's Halloween. Is this will be the first John Carpenter film that we've done on the list? No, we've done
The Fog. We've done The Fog.
done more John Carpenter films than any other director.
Yeah, we've done The Fog. We've done the Flip Flop. I don't know what else have we done.
The Flip Flop. So next week doing Halloween from 1978. Nice little preparation for the film that comes out in October. But any other news? Any other stuff you want to share?
Nothing, mate. That's it. I'm done. I'm finished.
Cool. This video is brought to you by Hawk and Cleaver. Head over to hawkandcleaver.com. Go over to Facebook and search for Horror Hangout Board of Advisors to join the little Facebook group there. Become a patron over at patreon.com/hawkandcleaver. Thanks to Kovacs Cowman for our theme music. Thanks to Acast for hosting the show. Thanks to the listeners. If you enjoyed the show, give us a rating and review in iTunes and remember to hit subscribe. And thanks to my co-host Ben for being a real horror dude.
Thank you very much, Luke.
Cheers.
Before we go,
should we try and get a co-host on next time? We've not had one for a little while.
Yeah. Yes, let's do it.
Okay. Right.
I don't care who. I don't give a crap who. Anyone. Anyone.
Get any old sausage on.
Dave from Dana Pub. Get him down here.
Yeah. Cool. All right. See you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.